We're off to a great start now, buddy. I think. My name is Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Can y'all hear me all right? Thanks, Dave. Thanks anybody that had anything to do with getting me here. I'm honored to be here, and there'll be people in this audience that will love this talk, and this room is full of people that I have known for years and love dearly. And there's some people in this room that will never come back, and they will be they will be quite irritated. I need to thank the committee for letting me come up and do this. It's an honor. I'm gonna try to watch my language and make sure I don't cuss too much tonight, because I know we got some young ones in the audience, and I'll probably fail miserable at that, but I'm gonna try to do it anyway. And I want to thank Pandora a bunch for getting these arrangements ahead of time and doing this stuff. Travel has gotten to be kind of nuts since 9/11, and it takes a lot more to do these things than it used to, and scheduling and blah, blah, blah. And she scheduled this ages ago, and I was honored to be able to fit this in. I get to travel a lot. I was talking to a cat earlier, and I think I offended him. I need to make some stuff clear before I get started, because I want to make sure we're all on the same page. I travel a lot. I speak a lot, and I don't speak a lot because I have an interesting story. I speak a lot because I'm pretty controversial. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I nearly died getting to this fellowship. And once I got to this fellowship, I nearly died again. And some of the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight is going to make some of you feel a little uncomfortable. And if that's the case, good. You probably need to feel uncomfortable. I mean, you know, let's look at something real quick. Give me a minute to get cranking here. Let's look at something real quick. I'm keeping an eye on a clock, too, and I know exactly, because I don't want to keep you very long. If you guys can last about 45 minutes with me, you get a little purple heart, you know. It's like something. At some of these we balked. We just read it. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness in our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Now, I'm going to tell you guys, just because you're an Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean that you've gotten rid of all of your old ideas. And a lot of you cats came to us via treatment centers, via therapists, via maybe some groups that weren't exactly on the page. And so some of the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight is going to seem a little controversial to you. You cats on this side of the room, guys, listen, if you see them rushing me, warn me, okay, so I can, because I can't. I'm pretty quick, I got to tell you. I usually catch you, but usually all my buddies sit over here and all my enemies sit over here, so they can. See, if I don't do anything stupid this time next week, I'll have 15 years of sobriety. That's an amazing thing for me. I'm a cat that could not drink. Again, I'm going to say this. I'm going to be around all week long, and so some of the stuff I'm going to talk about is going to be offensive to you. Then please, by all means, come up later, and I'll eat crow and make amends to you. I won't really mean it, but I'll make amends to you. I just think we're all adults. You know, we have to look at some stuff. I mean, I got to get down to brass. I mean, I almost died getting to this fellowship, and once I got here, I nearly died again. I mean, listening to the stuff in some of our meetings just scares the bejesus out of me, you know? And it's like everybody looks around and says, well, it's okay. It's AA. It's AA. Let me be the first just to tell you from the podium, it's not AA. I mean, we got to get one more thing, we'll get moving on this. This will be good. On page 34, all right, y'all brought your books, didn't you? On page 34, I'm getting blinder, I got to use the little cheaters. These are pretty fine-looking glasses, don't you think? Buddy, I tell you, I just got back from New York. They gave me a raft about these glasses. They just still laughing about those glasses in New York. They think everybody in Texas are fruitcakes wearing these kind of glasses. I don't know. On page 34, here's what it says. Now, nobody talked to me about this. I went to my first AA meeting about 1980, and nobody talked to me about this. So I'm reading it every time I go to a meeting now, because I need to get straight with this. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. What a concept, huh? We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Now, I'm sitting up here on the podium talking to a bunch of drunks in this room, and I'm going to tell you, that's an assumption. I don't assume for a second that everybody in this room wants to get sober and stay sober. You're not all on the same page with me, and that's okay. That bless you, that's okay. You don't have to be on the same page with me. You might like it, but I don't know. We'll see. Here. Here's the kicker, and I'm going to read it twice because it's going to go right past you the first time I read it. It did me. Whether such a person can quit on a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he's going to drink or not. You with me? Whether such a person can quit on a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the ability to choose whether he's going to do it or not. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. The utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Now, folks, that's alcoholism. If you stopped drinking because you got in trouble with the law or because the little wifey poo... asked you to stop and you quit, you're welcome in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're welcome in my meetings. But I want to be the first to say it from the podium. You better be careful what you're saying in my meeting. Because you don't need spiritual intervention to quit. That means that you don't need to work the steps. And it means you don't need to follow the traditions. And you can do it any way you want. And shame on you for sharing that in meetings and killing alcoholics like me, who have to have the spiritual experience in order to get well. I don't know. That's the one that had the Spanish fly in it. I know. All right. You can tell you're back in Texas. They didn't understand the Spanish fly joke in New York. I don't understand. Okay, so the bottom line is here. This is the most controversial thing I say from the podium, and I'll get on with the business. And then you guys that are ready to get up and go ahead and leave, go ahead and smoke a cigarette, and it was nice getting to see you this weekend. Let's do breakfast in the morning. Okay. If you believe it's your God-given right to walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and say anything you want, you're not going to like this talk. Please go smoke now. I mean, really, I'm giving you a chance to back out of here instead of just grinding your teeth. You know, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, you know. I got sober in 1987, and I went to my first AA meeting in 1980. I lived down in Ingram, Texas. It's a little old country town down around Kerrville, which is just west of San Antonio. Y'all know where San Antonio is. It's down in the sheep country and the camp country, and there's a lot of tourists down there. And I work for a treatment center down there. I do clerical work for a treatment center. No, I don't break traditions. I don't get paid to carry the message, dig. I don't want to hear any of that tonight, okay? Here's what I do. I do clerical work. I run a little store. And in the process of doing this, I get a chance to come across a bunch of the alcoholics and addicts that come through there. I get a chance to do some big book work with them. And it's such an honor to get to do that, to sit down with somebody that's fresh in the program who is dying of a fatal illness, and then we get a chance to give them some hope. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. I went out there initially to work for a few months, you know, just to make ends meet. And I've been there 9 years. And I hope I'm there nine more. I don't know what to say. It's an honor to be a part of that institution. But the message I'm carrying tonight, I think one of the reasons that I'm so passionate from the podium, I have a tendency to raise my voice a little bit, is that not only have I nearly died in this fellowship trying to get here, but I watch a lot of these cats come into my hospital, the fellowship. I mean, we get these cats come through there. We get about 1,000 a year through this hospital, and I get a chance to rub elbows with every one of them, and I get to ask them the questions. And the stuff out of their mouth for 9 years has been the same. Buddy, how come you didn't stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, I got sober in AA. I didn't get sober in a treatment center. I got sober in AA. Well, how come you didn't get sober in AA? You with me? Without exception. War stories. Too many war stories. And people whining about their problems. Isn't that great? That was so good. That was nice. That was great. I hope that shows up on a tape. That's great. But you see, most of us in this room are on the same playing field. See, but I'm going to talk about it tonight, you know, and it's not like I haven't ever done it. Buddy, listen, you're looking at the consummate victim here. Buddy, I mean, I've used AA as a dumping ground since 1980. I mean, buddy, you can't get a date. You can't get a job. Come into AA and whine a while, and I guarantee you somebody will have pity on you. I mean, I'm going to tell you. I mean, it's the best gig in town. If that's all you got, it's the best deal in town. But see, this is where the confusion is, because a lot of you cats have come to us from treatment centers, and you were told to do that. And a lot of us came to AA, and we were told to do that by the people that sponsored us into the fellowship. All I want you to do is, the old idea I want you to get rid of is that maybe, as a fellowship, we're not on the same page. Maybe we've gotten off the track. Maybe that wasn't the intended message that Bill and Dr. Bob in the first 100 had in mind. Maybe. No maybe to it. Pick up the book, read the archives, and it'll tell you. Alcoholics Anonymous right now has the worst success rate in 67 years of its history. We have our worst success rate. Everybody's so busy pointing finger at the drug addict. It's them damn drug addicts. No, it ain't. It's this, it's that. No, it's not. It's that the message that we heard back in the early days when success rates were 75% and better, back in 1940, when we had a very clear message. You know what we talked about in 1940? God in the steps. You know what we talk about today? Who knows? Thank you. Who knows? We still do it. I'm going to tell you something, guys. We've seen a big movement in this country, though. A lot of people getting sick and tired of that stuff. And what they're doing is they're changing the formats of their meeting to not allow it to happen. And we're starting to see a whole bunch of people talking about the literature. Let me tell you what happened to me, okay? 1972, I went to Houston. I spent about 10 years on and off here in Houston. I absolutely adore this town. I know a lot of y'all can't wait to get out of here, but I'd love to move back. I don't know what to say. Love it. Absolutely love it. Don't remember a lot of it. I was drunk most of the time, but I love it. I lived down in Montrose when it was cool, and I worked at the Warwick Hotel for a couple of years. I mean, it was just a cool place to be. And I moved to Houston as an apprentice. I was in a food business. I wanted to be a chef, and I got an apprenticeship program at the old Houston Oaks Hotel. And I started working over there, and I was quite successful in that business, and I started making a little money. But, you know, the depression was kicking my, you know what. My dad had been an alcoholic, and I knew that the beer was going to be a problem for me, so I was trying to stay away from that. But the only thing that alleviated the depression that made me okay inside was a couple of brewskis, little vino, dig? And it started getting out of hand because I've got the physical allergy and I can't control it once I start to drink it. So sometimes it would just get a little bit wave and I would overdrink a bit. Dig what I'm saying? My first wife used to say, you seem to get so thirsty. It was like, you never quite put two and two together. It had nothing to do with the thirst. You know, and it had nothing to do with the taste. You know, she'd drink a beer that I would drink. She says, how can you drink that nasty stuff? It's because it's cheap. That's how I come to do. And it's got the same amount of alcohol in it as your nice, you know, whatever you're drinking. I said, you know, it's economics. I started doing a bunch of geographicals. I went to Austin for a period of time. I went to Atlanta. I went to Vernon, Texas. It was a dry county. You know, you had to drive 60 miles to get a beer in that stupid town. It was nuts. We did it a couple of times a week. You know, we would go buy cases of beer. See, what alcoholics... How can I put this? What normal? I know there's some people in here that are not alcoholic and addict, and they might understand this. But I think it's the toughest thing that we have to do when we explain when we're talking to the family members is that alcoholics and addicts are different than normal people. You follow us? I mean, there's an industry out there that wants us to be real weird. I mean, it's just different, you know. But in one area, we cannot control the stuff once we put it in our body, and given sufficient reason, I just read it, we can't stop. So you think, family members think, well, when it gets bad enough, they'll quit. Guys, death is when it's going to get bad enough. Because we don't remember the consequences. We just keep going back again. I stop for short periods of time and start fooling myself, thinking everything's going to be okay. And then I start doing it again. And that's why I need the spiritual experience in order to recover from this ridiculously tragic illness. It's a disease, folks. If you're wired this way, you got it. It's fatal, and you're going to die from it if you don't have the spiritual experience. Nowhere in my book does it say, if you finally work through that issue, you're going to get well. It says, if you have the... I'm not knocking the issues. I think we need to work through the issues. But I'm saying what we need to focus on is the spiritual experience. See? And that's what nobody would talk to me about when I finally got to this fellowship. Because we were too busy trying to fix Chris Raymer. I'll tell you about it. 1980, I'm married. I'm living up in North Texas. I have sent my first wife to, she had a nervous breakdown as a result of living with me. She wasn't drinking and she wasn't drugging. She was just living with somebody that was absolutely certifiably crazy. And bless her heart, as a result of that, seeing that counselor there in, up in North Texas sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to my first AA meeting. And that was to be my beginning of my journey. Guys, I was a functioning alcoholic. I need to explain it to you real quick, because I had some times when I was talking to somebody earlier. I was eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. Things got a little tight here, you know? And but I had some times that I was living in a penthouse downtown, too. I mean, it's like I either got a lot of money or I got no money. And it's like, you know, I'm flush, you know. It's nuts. The depression is what I couldn't get past, folks. The depression is what I couldn't get. And so I'm going in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous trying to get better. And I come into your meetings, and the first thing you want to do is start with your stupid war stories. Now, guys, I'm in your AA meeting. I'm here. The book says that there's a place for your 12-step. Your war story is a thing called a 12-step call. Can y'all say that? 12-step call. That means when you go to Denny's and there's a drunk in there, you know, and you sit down at the booth with him and drink a little coffee and talk to him about how you got, you know, what your life, and so they can get a little identification. And then we get the guy when he says, "Yeah, I want what you got." Then we get him and we bring him to a meeting. At that particular point, you don't have to tell him any more war stories. He's here. I got these people all the time. Says, all we have is our story. Listen, let me tell you something, buddy. If that's all I got is my stupid war stories, then shame on me. If I think for a second that you listening to my stupid story of eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas is going to scare you into sobriety, if you're a real alcoholic, you're not going to buy that stuff anyway. Y'all with me? My book says on page 17, we all have a common problem. But we got the common solution, too. And that's what we need to talk about. I'm going to talk about the common problem at Denny's. And then I'm going to bring him into a meeting. And now we're going to talk about the common solution. Because I got him here now. I need to keep him here. Ha! What a concept. Did we do that? Nope. Not for old Chris Raymer. We sat there and tried to scare his little skinny butt to death. And I'm listening. I've talked about this for 10 years from the podium, folks. I can remember it like it was yesterday. I'm sitting there listening to all your stupid war stories, and we're going around in a circle, and you're giving me this. Well, I had two DWIs. I've never had one DWI. Check. Well, I've been to the federal penitentiary. Check. I was in six car. Check. I black out. Check. I piss my pants. Check, 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 check. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is nuts and stupid. I mean, what do we assume that everybody in this room is on the same page with that nonsense? You got a businesswoman that just comes in, right? She's going out at lunchtime. She's got a little wine cooler out there. She's drinking. She's got a bottle of vodka. She's coming apart at the seams. She's got a husband and kids, and she's never been in a lick of trouble, but she can't stop drinking. Because when she stops drinking, she comes apart at the seams. Y'all with me? And she comes into a meeting, and then she's going to listen to me tell my story again about the dumpster. And we sit there and let it happen. Unbelievable. Show me in the book where it says, there's a chapter back here, show me in the book where it says, in despair. Show me where the chapter is where we're supposed to initiate a bunch of fear into the newcomer. That's why we can't keep the newcomers. That's why we can't keep the young adults in our meetings. Because we're too busy trying to scare them in here. My book says we're supposed to pull them with a vision. Pull them with a vision of how great, absolutely great life is. That's what we're supposed to do. Are we going to do that? No. We're too busy trying to scare you with a bunch of stupid war stories. We've got to stop. And you know what happens when we finish with the war stories? You know what we're going to do? We're going to take off the old AA hat and we're going to put on the old junior therapy hat. Because all God's chillin's got troubles, and my group is going to help you get well. We're gonna help you with every problem you got. We're going to try to help you with it. I was a meeting in San Antonio, Texas 2 weeks ago, and I'm telling you, they knew I was in the room, and they started the meeting like this anyway. They read the preamble, how it works, nice meeting, steps on the wall, traditions, everything cool so far, everything's great, setting up to be a good meeting. Chairperson, well, I didn't have time to pick a topic today. So much for being a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have time to do that. Of course, I had time to do everything else under the sun. Thank you very much. But didn't have time to pick a topic. So, anybody in here have a problem they need to talk about? Come on, guys. Who doesn't have a problem in here that they need to talk about? I'm going to run this by you one more time. Alcoholism and drug addiction. Alcoholism, dig right here, is a disease, genetic in nature. You have a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. The underlying reason for this whole thing is a thing called a spiritual malady. And it doesn't have a rat's butt thing to do with your problems. I don't know. I don't know how we can get any clearer than this. I mean, guys, I've done this, and every time I've ever done a talk for the last 5 years, I feel just compelled to do it because you guys are a great audience. I gotta do this. How many of you guys drank and drug when you had a lot of money in your pocket? Let the record show every hand in the house is up. How many of you drank and drug when you didn't have a penny in your pocket? How many when you lived in a big, beautiful home? Burned out trailer. When you had a great job. Crappy job. Same hands. Here's the kicker. How many when you was in a great relationship with somebody that you truly loved? How many when you was dating Satan's offspring? It's the same. It's the same. I love it. Guys, it doesn't matter if I'm doing that in Canada. It doesn't matter if I'm doing that in New York or Phoenix or wherever I'm talking. It doesn't matter down in Mississippi. It's the same every place. Everybody, guys, there's a line, great line in the book, in Fred's story. He says, it was the end. Y'all know Fred's story in there on page 35, 36 in there? He says, it was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. Next paragraph. He gets drunk. He's like, now, guys, how can we beat? It was the end of a perfect day. I mean, not a cloud on the horizon. I mean, how are we going to defend ourselves from that? We're not. That's the strange mental blank spot. That's the mental twist that the book talks about. The only way that I'm going to survive this crazy insanity is to regain some sanity. How do you do that? You have a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps. Bill Wilson wrote a little pamphlet that Alcoholics Anonymous produces it. It's called Problems Other Than Alcohol. It's a great little pamphlet. It's got some pretty good stuff in it, especially some of you cats in here that are having some problems with pills and stuff. Some good stuff in that little pamphlet. But one of the key lines in there, it says, sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities, and they always fail. Sole purpose of an AA group is to try to help you stay sober. Guys, I don't understand how we can do this. Excuse me, but I started to speak in tongues there for a minute. I'm trying to be real conservative. I'm trying to change my image here. Listen, guys, how do we do this? We walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting tonight, anywhere in Houston, Texas, and some drug addict will come in and want to start talking about crack cocaine, and there won't be an AA meeting in here that won't shut him down. And listen, I'm going to tell you something. I believe in singleness and purpose, and I believe he should be shut down. AA is for alcoholics. I don't have a problem with that. But you know, we don't have a problem doing that, but yet you come in there and want to talk about your stupid divorce one more time, and nobody wants to say anything. Well, that's okay. Go ahead. She needs a place to share. Yeah? Yeah, it's a fact. She needs a place to share. Does it have to be in my AA meeting? What about the guy over there in the corner that's dying of alcoholism, that's got the DTs, is trying to detox in your meeting, has never been married? Now, what kind of help's he going to get? But he came to your meeting to get help, to learn how to have a spiritual experience. But they're not going to have time to share that information with the cat because we're too busy trying to play junior therapist with this woman with a divorce. And it could have been a man. Come on, guys, I've heard it 1,000 times. We want to talk about the job. We want to talk about the money. We want to talk about the kids. We want to talk about the cat that scratched the stupid chair. We want to talk about, here's my favorite line. It just absolutely makes me want to, I'm just having a bad day. I just need a minute to share a minute. Listen, come on, guys. Who in the hell do you think you are? I mean, really, really. And we've all done it. I've done it. I'm going to ask you point blank. Who do you think you are? What do you think this is about? The newcomer that's coming in detoxing and needs some help, he's having a bad day. We're supposed to be there for the newcomer. But you're going to share about your bad day. I suggest very strongly that you look at your sponsorship lineage. I suggest very strongly that you call your sponsor and try to visit with him a little bit about that. And you might want to read page 62 where it talks about selfish and self-centeredness being the root of my problems. Unbelievable. Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. It's always been about me. Forever it's been about me. Y'all follow what I'm saying? For just a second, though, Chris Raymer, can you not think about yourself and just think about them for a minute? Gosh, you know the best days I've got are when I'm so deep in work with another newcomer, it's not even funny. Those are the happiest moments of my life because I'm not worried about, guess who's taking care of my stuff while I'm taking care of your stuff? God. Listen, I need to move on with this because I'm going to run out of time, but let me make a point because sometimes I have a tendency to get a little confused here. I want to make sure that everybody in this room, everybody from that side right over there, clear back over to this side over here, and anybody listening to these tapes, I want them to understand exactly what I'm saying. Every person in this world has got issues, and every person in this world, I personally believe, this is an opinion of mine, if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous right now and you're not seeing a therapist occasionally, you're probably screwing up. Listen, AA is not a catch-all for every problem you've got. I think a good therapist can help you with a lot of things, and I think you need to see one. What you don't need to do is come into my meetings and try to get it for free. I need to tell you, I see one today. I went through a rough divorce last year, and there were some pieces in there that I needed to really look at, and I double up on some meetings and I work with some drunks, but I also saw a therapist, and I'm grateful that that therapist was there. There was a cat back in 1976. This guy was named Bob Bacon, and he was a delegate from Northeast Ohio. Supposedly, he's passed away. That's why I broke his anonymity. But here in this little article in here, it was an excerpt from a tape. This delegate, 1976. Some of you guys weren't even born then. Are we to content that our AA meeting, are we in the content of our AA meetings getting away from AA's basics? I believe we are. Alcoholics Anonymous is growing at a faster rate than at any time since the 40s, and I suspect we are not ready for such growth. Have we gotten a little complacent and smug in our well-being? People today are coming to Alcoholics Anonymous in far better shape physically and mentally than most of us did. We need to show them how we learned to stay sober. If our meetings consist mostly of drinking experiences, our ideas and opinions, do we now? I know we're going to fix it to find out. We are not doing our jobs. Dr. Bob said our program was boiled down to love and service. I mean, what's our job? Is to show somebody to have a spiritual experience. Guys, I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1979, and nobody told me how to have a spiritual experience. They told me, don't worry about the God stuff, and easy does it, take your time to work the steps. Now, that's what they told me in 1979, 1980, when I got here. And I did exactly what they asked me to do. I didn't worry about the God thing, and I didn't do the steps. Consequently, I didn't have a spiritual experience. Consequently, I lost that wife, and I lost the third and fourth business. And in 1980, I tried to commit suicide. And in 1987, I tried a little harder. I went home one day after work and a cold November night and took a bottle of pills and a bottle of booze and went to the bathroom and looked myself in the mirror and was disgusted with what I saw. I was not who my daddy raised. I was raised in a great, wonderful home, a lot of love, and I was raised in a church, I need to tell you. But the person staring back at me was not the person that I intended to be. And I did what so many people in this fellowship and in this room tonight have tried to do. About halfway through that experience, I heard a voice that said, "Don't do it." I don't know what I heard. We laugh about it. It could have been the guy's vacuum cleaner next door. I don't know what I heard. What I heard was, "Don't do it. Go back to AA." And I'm sitting there, guys, inebriated, arguing with God. You know, it's like, you know, "God, buddy, we've done this AA stuff. We've done it. It didn't work. I'm still drunk. 7 years in and out. I'm a poster boy for the idea that meeting makers don't make it. People that work the steps make it." But I didn't know that. I aborted the attempt, and the next day I got a doctor that gave me some doggy downers and helped me detox. And that night I went into my first AA meeting. It was a long stretch there that I hadn't been going. I went back into Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a different group than I'd ever been to before, and I've told the story 1,000 times, folks. I'll make it quick, but it was pretty simple. It's pretty poignant. I walked in the back door of this AA meeting, and I walked in the back door, and there's about 40 people in the room, and they're all laughing, and they're smoking cigarettes, and they're having a good time. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. I listened to that laughter, and I hated their guts because I hated myself so bad it wasn't even funny. I knew I needed to go in there. I knew that was the last house on the block. The antidepressants weren't working. The therapy hadn't worked. The job changes hadn't worked. The women hadn't worked. The money hadn't. Nothing had worked. Because at the end of the day, I was left alone with me and what's inside. And I wanted to die. And I walked in that room, and there was a little girl that got between me and the door and wouldn't let me out because I started to back out about the time they started laughing. And she slapped me on the leg and pulled me down in the chair next to her, and she said, "Sit down, buddy." She said, "Sit down, cowboy." And she slapped me on the leg, and she set me down. It was up in North Texas. That girl was 19 years old. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a young adult in this fellowship and you don't feel a part, you hear this. If it hadn't been for that 19-year-old girl, I'd have been dead today because I was gone. And I sat there in that room, and the chairperson said, "Let's go around tonight. Let's don't do the usual first step stuff. Let's go around tonight, and let's share a little bit with old Chrissy," because they'd seen me up in North Texas for years. I'd picked up Desire Chips by the thousands. And I had drawers full of them. And they said, "We're going to go around the room, and we want to share a little bit about your experience with the steps. Share a little bit about how your life is better today as a result of God." I'm going to tell you something, guys. They all went around the room, and there wasn't any long-winded speeches. They all shared little vignettes of how their life had changed as a result of working the steps. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. I don't remember everything they said, but I remember the tears in their eyes, and I remember the joy in their faces, and I remember the absolute concern for me that they showed me. They weren't mincing any words, and they didn't really care if I went. I mean, there was none of this mincing around, you know, easy does it stuff. They said, "Chris, buddy, you're dying. We can smell it on you. You need to make some changes. You need the spiritual experience." And the old-timers got around me. The next morning, we did a third-step prayer, and they gave me the stuff for the fourth step. And 2 weeks later, the Friday after I'd come in, 2 weeks after I'd come in from that suicide attempt, I had a completed four-step in my hand, and I'm laughing with my sponsor because I was seeing stuff in that fourth column that took my breath away. Those people hadn't screwed me. I'd screwed myself. I wasn't a victim. I was a volunteer. Yeah. And I had an appointment to do that fifth step with the sponsor. And I went home that night. Guys, I'll never forget that night as long as I live. I cranked up some rock and roll on that old beat-up AM radio. I'm telling you, it was the coolest. And the windows are all busted out, and it's colder than hell in that truck. And I'm driving home, and I'm higher than a kite. I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. And I get out of my truck in the same apartment complex, in the same parking lot that I took all those pills in. And I pulled down the tailgate of my old truck, and I sat on the tailgate. And there wasn't a breath of air outside. It's crystal cold. The big old full moon coming up. And I'm surrounded. There's a liquor store and a 7-Eleven and a Circle K thing, a stop and go. There's 3 convenience stores. My drug dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live. It's Friday. I got a pocket full of money, and I live by myself. I don't want to drink. And I sit on the end of that truck and cry like a baby. Because I'm going to tell you something, folks. That was 15 years ago, and I recovered from alcoholism. At that point, I wasn't even finished with the steps, and God had removed the obsession for me to use. And I was an alcoholic that could not drink. and he took the obsession to use away. And I'm sitting here trying to figure out what happened. Chris, spiritual experience is what happened. God's greatest gift to me, next to giving me my life. The obsession to do cocaine left at the same point, in case anybody's interested. And I was off on a journey, guys. And I tried to stay as active as I could, and every time I tried to pull back from the fellowship to re-enter the mainstream of life, my life would go to the toilet, and I would come back in, and I'd start doing the work again, and I would be back on track. Y'all follow what we're saying? I think some of y'all have experienced that. See? My job says we're supposed to stay as close to this business as we possibly can. Let me say this, and I'm going to wrap it up for you. One of the reasons that I'm so passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous is that I know quite well that it's our only hope. I know treatment centers have made great strides in helping us with lots of things that we do, but there's, up to this point, no pill that will take the obsession to use away. I get calls every day from people that talk, what do you think about this anti-craving drug? What do you think about this anti-craving drug? I think it's great. Craving is not Chris Raymer's problem. That's a physical thing. Once I'm detoxed, there's no more craving. That's not a problem for me. It's the obsession that's driving me bat nuts, you know? So what I got to do is I got to get something that's going to remove that obsession. And God, we know, takes care of that. Everybody wants to put the cart back before the horse. You know, it's like, I want to get my life all ordered, everything great out here, and then I'm going to volunteer for intergroup. And then I'm going to go do service work. Ain't that right, Tom? You know, and then I'm going to go work with a newcomer. You know, that's not the way they did it. You know, y'all know the story, Roland Hazard brought the message from Carl Jung. He took Ebby and he took him by the neck and spent 2 weeks with the little guy. He spent 2 weeks with a guy working him through the steps. Then he took him down to the mission to work with drunks. Ebby went and found Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson's 9 days in Towns Hospital, still detoxing when he has his barn-burning spiritual experience. He's working the steps in the hospital. He's making amends in the hospital. Do y'all understand that? Bill Wilson gets the message of hope, and he carries it to Dr. Bob. A little less than 2 weeks, Dr. Bob. Bill D, number three, a little less than 2 weeks. Guys, all of the cats, the first 100, worked the steps in less than a month. Why are we in our arrogance telling the newcomer to take the time to work the steps? We're killing them. Those people in 1987 knew that Chris Raymer didn't have any time to take his time. He needed to get to God quick. And that's what they understood. Their job was not to fix me. Fellowship, please, family. If you hear nothing else I say tonight, please hear this. Your job is not to fix the newcomer. You can't fix the newcomer. Your job is to carry the message of hope to the newcomer so that he can get connected to God, so God can fix him. When you cats figure out how to remove the obsession to drink, I'll set you up in an office and we'll all get real wealthy. But until that happens, why don't we do what we're supposed to do and be a conduit of one simple message of hope to the newcomer? Work the steps. If you've been around this fellowship, God, let me read something to you. This is where this scares the stuff out of me. I sent one of these to my friend Bob W. over here. Emailed him not long ago one of these copies of this. I got this, it doesn't matter where I got it. I got it across the internet from... It was one of those porn sites. That's where it was. No, wait a minute. Here. United States Court of Appeals, Second Circuit. This is up in New York. Now, this is the stuff that's coming down. Y'all remember about 6 months ago when all the stuff came down the pike about praying in schools and stuff, and we had all this court stuff coming on us about, you know, you can't pray in schools, and they start taking the... This is a part of the same piece of court material that's coming through the system right now. This is the part of the same stuff. And what it basically says is that if you are a state-funded or federally funded facility, treatment center, you're not going to be able to talk about God anymore in these facilities. No more higher power, no more God, no more nothing. We're going to be able to do some good therapy, thank God for that, but we're not going to be able to talk about, no, we're not going to be able to talk about God. And this is some tough... The facility I work for is privately owned. We're not going to be affected by this. But all the state-funded facilities, the inexpensive facilities that most of us knuckleheads can go to, we're going to put them out of business. Because what else have they got to teach? What's going to remove the obsession for us to use is God. And we can't talk about it now. And guys, you think that this can't happen? Yes, it can. And let me tell you what's going to happen. The same thing happened when the state system here in Texas started closing down the state hospitals and the VAs. They stopped treating. I'm going to tell you, thousands of alcoholics and addicts are going to start pouring back into our facilities, back into our fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous. And that 12-step work that you've been shunning for ages and making excuses why you don't have time to do is going to get dropped right flat in your lap. And it's going to be time, guys, to pick up the old, you know, the old plow and start plowing. We got too many people sitting on the sidelines in this fellowship. We got too many people that got in under the door and now just sitting here playing cards and talking stuff, and they ain't helping a newcomer get sober. The old timers said it best. You could sum this program up in two words: humility and responsibility. Humility is knowing where the power comes from, folks. Everything I have, everything I am, is a direct result of God's grace in my life. Because I should be dead tonight. And thank God this is not about justice. Thank God this is about mercy. Ain't that the truth? There's some humility. And then we walk into these meetings, and what we need to do is humbly as we can say, what can I do to help carry the message? And pick up the tools of responsibility and carry that message. Folks, I got to say it and I'll let you out. If you are a part of a group where they won't let you chair meetings for a year, you need to go to Group Conscience and get that changed. You need to get some old-timers to come up with you and help you chair that meeting. I'm not saying throw somebody to the dogs. Sit down with an old-timer and say, would you help me chair this meeting? Because we don't have time for you to wait a year to get in the trenches with us. If you're 3 months in this fellowship, I'll give you 3 months. And if you're not 3 months in this fellowship and you haven't finished working the steps, I want you to call me on the phone and explain who in the hell you think you are. Because I'm telling you, folks, we don't have time to wait anymore. We don't have time to wait. I'm looking at it from my perspective. I'm in a treatment center and I watch people die. Hundreds of people a year die coming from our facility. I've been around this fellowship for 20 years and I've watched, I can't tell you how many die. This is fatal. And then you're going to sit here and milk this thing and sit on a 4-step for 6 months? We don't have time to wait for you. We need your help in the trenches. Everybody keeps waiting for the treatment centers to fix it. The treatment centers are not going to fix it. You're going to fix it. That was your legacy. What was given to you. Make some of you uncomfortable, didn't I? You got a sponsor that's telling you to take your time to work the steps. I'm going to tell you with as much respect as I can muster right now, get another sponsor. Let me tell you what could possibly be the problem. The problem could possibly be that the guy didn't have enough time to mess with you and he's trying to drag you along. I'm going to tell you something, folks. There's plenty of people out here that'll do the work with you. We don't have to. Guys, this is, I don't know why we want to make this rocket science. The steps were intended to be worked rapidly, in a few weeks at the most. Why do I need you to take your time? I need you to help me carry the message back into the other treatment center. I need you to come to the halfway house and help me carry a workshop. I don't have time to wait for you to get comfortable in your skin. Yeah. How are you going to get comfortable in your skin is going to be carry the message. Come on, guys, that was my story. That was my story. The old timers, they said, Chris, go answer the... I'll never forget. They said, Chris, go answer the phone. I said, buddy, I'm still sitting here detoxing. I'm not answering the stupid phone here. You answer the phone. He said, Chris, we've asked you to do one simple thing. Can you participate in this group in some small way? Answer the phone. You with me? I'll never forget. Ring, ring. They're all standing like this. Well, answer the phone. I said, what do I say? Say, Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, buddy, they're just going to ask a meeting. There's a meeting schedule on the wall that's probably just asking information, just to answer it. If you get in trouble, we'll be here to help you. They guided me, guys. They showed me how to do this. Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody needed a meeting schedule. It was an Al-Anon. We got an Al-Anon meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. Hung up the phone. Never forget it. Stood up. Stood up a little taller. The little guy that was sponsored me looked back. Don Smith. He looks. He said, "Yeah, huh? Did that good, didn't it?" And then listen. Right? For months after that, the phone would ring like that, and then somebody, some guy, would start going, "Oh no, that's my. No, I got it. I got to take care of it." That's my job. That's my job, you know? That's what you got to do in AA. You got to find your job. If you don't have a job in AA, you're missing the boat, folks. Guys, the cats are waiting for you. I've said it. I'll close with it. We don't need any more Chris Raymers. We got enough Chris Raymers. One. Thank God for that. We don't need any. Guys, here's what we need. You need to understand that you survived. You lived from the street or from the abuse and from all the crazy stuff you've been through and the drama. To be here tonight and to go back into your meeting and carry this message. Now, if you're not there, don't be mistaken for a second. Somebody was supposed to connect with you. And you're not there because you're home watching television or out there with a little kissy face. Dig? Little he and she going on here. Come to the meeting and then do that after. You know what I'm saying? But if you're not here, then somebody's going to miss you. Because I'm going to tell you something. Some of the stuff coming out of your mouths are pearls of wisdom. And I'm going to tell you, people are looking for that. And we need more spiritual mentors in our fellowship. And that's what you are. When you start taking the responsibility of that, we're going to see a whole fellowship change. You were allowed to live for one reason, to carry that message of hope to a newcomer. Be there, please. Be there for the newcomer. Because we need your help. For every one of you guys that continues to take a big book into the meeting, I love you. For every one of you old coots that keep hanging around, keep taking the flack. Buddy, I want to tell you, you stand on the heat carrying a big book, talking about the solution. You shut a meeting down. You stop a meeting where somebody's going off on some stupid tear, and you say, excuse me a minute, we're here to talk about the literature tonight. We're here to talk about step one or whatever you're working on. You stop a meeting, you're not going to be popular.
Amen.
Come on. Can you do it gently? You betcha. Can you do it? No, don't do it. Come on, you guys go get CDs of mine and tapes of mine, and y'all walk in, you know, you're ready to, somebody gets off topic and you shoot them, you know, that's not what this is about. You want to tackle them, this is with love and tolerance. Excuse me a minute, we'll talk about that after the meeting. Right now, we need to steer this meeting back on topic. I believe we were talking about the third step. Come on, guys, be responsible in these meetings. Let's get this stuff back on track. You're not going to be popular for that. But, you know, you might have saved somebody's life by doing that. You follow me? Here it is. I can hear it. But I can hear it now. Come on, I hear it. But if that person doesn't get a chance to share, he might go drink. He's going to drink anyway. What about the poor schmuck that had never heard the meeting, the message? Be there for him. That's what you're here for. Bless every one of you. I love you. Thank you for being here.